This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hour two on a Friday of the Hoffman Show on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And it is time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not My Beat.
And it is my pleasure today to welcome back to the show our pal Evan Washburn, sideline reporter from CBS, who just wrapped up out in Ashburn, all the production meetings, got to meet with everybody of importance out there. Evan, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Good to be with you, buddy.
Always great to have you. Always great to chat. Always great to see you, Ian, and Charles on the call for a game this weekend. And I'm just curious, like, dealing with the Commanders. Obviously, last year, the ownership had changed. Things had started to change. But just in general, dealing with the Commanders this week and today compared to years past and your experience covering this team, how different was it?
I think night and day wouldn't be overly dramatic. I mean, vibes are strong, man. I mean, it's a real thing. I'm sure I'm not the first one to bring that up when referencing the atmosphere over there in Ashburn. The building's the same, and a lot of things look the same. But, yeah, the energy, and let's be real, a lot of that has to do with the performance, the results. But I think terms like culture get thrown around a lot, but you can feel it when you walk through there and you talk to whether it's a Dan Quinn or an Adam Peters or players, but also support staff. And those people sometimes are more impactful in terms of giving you a sense of the real feeling than the people that are stars on Sundays.
I do, before we dive back into kind of some of those conversations and things you picked up, you're a Baltimore-based guy, and I'm just curious what the reaction was in Baltimore this week to the game last weekend, because we've spent a lot of time this week talking about how great Baltimore is very clearly, but hey, Washington showed that they belonged on that field a lot more than some other teams have with the Ravens over recent years. Was there a sense, you know, whether it's friends or if you check in on any of the local sports talk up there, following the Ravens beating Washington last weekend, that there was kind of like a, hey, respect to that team? Or was it like, they want to be on our level, but they ain't there yet?
No, I think there's a reality that that was a legitimate heavyweight fight that felt like a playoff game, had similar attributes to it. And I think the biggest takeaway, but it was also the dominant storyline heading into the game, was Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson being on the field together and just thinking, wow, if we could watch this for another 10 years, I mean, Lamar's a little farther along, obviously, than Jaden, but doesn't seem to be slowing down at all. That to me, kind of was the takeaway. You know this, Craig. I think it's what makes the NFL, from a rivalry standpoint, a little challenging, even when you have the natural geographic rivals. They just don't play enough. I mean, the NFL is all about your division, and that's the rivalry. That's what leaves the town talking, both either out of a panic and on a negative end or a positive end after a Sunday.
Evan Washburn, CBS Sports, with us here on the Hoffman Show. So speaking of Jaden, you've had the chance to talk to a lot of quarterbacks in these meetings over the years. Anything particularly stand out about this kid in general? And then especially when you rewind and go, wait, that came out of the mouth of a rookie.
He doesn't feel like a rookie. And I think this is what we're seeing this year with this rookie class, that the time in college and the journey in college really is impacting their transition to the NFL. They're still growing pains, and they could be around the corner for Jaden. You don't hope for it, but it's not always smooth sailing. But the fact that this young man, adult, was in college for 5 years, went through some things both on and off the field, and had to transfer, was doubted, and then built himself into a top five quarterback, he comes into the league and his eyes aren't wide. Now, he did mention that the guys are big, they're freakishly athletic. That is a transition. But from the maturity standpoint, it doesn't feel like any of this is too much for him.
Dan Quinn always talks about, oh, we got to learn lessons from every game, but especially he's emphasizing that, as you would expect, after losses. And talking to Jaden, was there anything that you picked up that he maybe learned from that Baltimore game, as that was the toughest challenge that he had faced yet?
The thing that stood out to me in our conversations, but also in just watching the team this week and the coverage from guys like yourself, they didn't like that whole narrative that, man, they hung around with Baltimore. This team, they're ready for this. Like, they wanted nothing to do with that. We didn't spend a lot of time, Craig, honestly, talking about the Baltimore, because, as you know, in our world, we're all about Sunday. And yes, right, Baltimore is a part of the buildup, and it'll be part of the discussion woven into the game. But it's really about, like, who is this team right now? How did they get here? You're spending less time reacting. But I do feel like the Baltimore game, and Dan Quinn mentioned it, was important. They learned a lot from that game. So we'll see what it means come Sunday.
Yeah, that's kind of, I think, the thing is, like, what do you take from it moving forward? Obviously, for Cliff Kingsbury, he's going to want to run the football a little bit more this weekend. Getting Brian Robinson back is, that automatically, with no other changes, it does change things. What was Cliff's emphasis, and what did he share that you can share with us about how he gets the offense, I think, back in a place where they're a little bit more comfortable? While Jaden was great as a thrower last weekend, they put a little bit more on his plate than I think they want to. How does Cliff find the right balance this weekend, and what did he share about that?
No, I think it's a good point. And to peel back the curtain some, from our side of things, we don't talk to the coordinators. Charles talks to the coordinators. We like give Charles that time to really dive into some of the minutiae of the football and allow it to impact his analysis of things. And then we come together as a group, and he'll pass along things. But, you know, and each production crew handles those things differently. But I think if I said this is what Cliff told us.
Okay, so Anthony, I'd like you to hang up on Evan, and we're going to call Charles now. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Evan's being very kind with his time. Evan Washburn is with us. And I guess everyone will just have to watch on Sunday if you're not going to be there. And you can get all the knowledge from Charles from the coordinator side. So when you talk to Dan, then, and I presume that you guys did get to talk, you and Ian, talk to him. And obviously you've been watching what he said this week. What sticks out about Dan maybe now versus when you guys had him in the past in Dallas as a coordinator? And if you ever had him back, especially the first time as a head coach when he was Atlanta, circling back to this round as a head coach?
I love the way he approaches everything, and that's been going back to the Atlanta days, and didn't cross paths while he was in Dallas, but he's just so authentic and genuine, and he's obviously like a football guy and has a deep, deep passion for the game and defense and the scheme and team building and culture, but just the comfort of where he is in his career and what he's building. And like, this is, as you know, Craig, this is no easy task. And for Dan, for Adam Peters, for everybody that's signed up for this transition from what it was to what they're hoping it's going to be. And I think what struck me spending some time there today and then preparing for this game, that they're doing their best to acknowledge the past. And that's what makes this weekend cool. And the fact that Daryl Green's going to get his number retired that weekend, they're embracing that, but it also feels like they're just living in the moment of knowing, man, we just got to get better. We've got to stack days. I think I can't remember who it was we were talking to today, but it was a healthy reminder. And I've lived this now long enough to feel it. We're going to laugh at some of the things we're talking about right now when it comes to the NFL. If you and I were to get on this call again in December and relive some of our week 7 top storylines. And I think the people in that building that have been around this thing, and Dan is leading that group, know that they can't, there's no trophy for being the darling team of the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, no, the trophy, to an extent, you get one as a target on your back that everyone wants to knock you off, which is just exactly what every football coach wants in their team. I'm curious, Evan, as you've gone around the league and watched it evolve over the time that you've been doing this, you mentioned Dan and kind of the humility he has and the humaneness that he brings to the job. I know Kevin O'Connell and Sean McVay from their time here, for instance, and I would say the same about those guys. And, you know, they're very human people as opposed to kind of this old school gruff caricature of a football coach. Have you noticed the general, like, head coach, you know, personality change? And if so, how has that changed the league for better or for worse through your eyes?
Yeah, I think like most things in society and business, things become cyclical. And you can look at it from a scheme standpoint, this offensive explosion. But then if you look at the numbers this year, at least through 6 weeks, it's been about defense and the less explosive plays. And are we seeing a return to the run game because they're exposing the fact that some of these defenses are so small because they've been built to defend the pass? Similarly, from a philosophical personality standpoint, the thing I always go back to when thinking about this topic, authenticity right now wins the day. So it's not that you've got to be the same level of cool or fun or gruff, or you got to be you, because players now, and I don't know how it's impacted. I don't spend enough time in college sports, but I do think there's a reality to what's happening in college sports and how it's going to impact continually the pro game. Players respond to coaches that, one, can make them better, and two, communicate while being authentically themselves. And so I think with the names that you've listed, whether it's Kevin O'Connell or Sean McVay or Dan Quinn, those guys, for better or worse, they're being them and they're comfortable. And I think players respond to that. And then they're also committed to improving everyone on their team individually, which in turn helps them win games. So I think authenticity is the in vogue thing. And I'm here for it, because I think the more that we could do that just in general for it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I mean, it's obviously on a human level, like people being themselves, and the authenticity is great to interact with. But especially in the role that you have and the way that you do it, getting to tell those stories, I'm sure, is a lot of fun these days. Evan will be on the call on the sideline on Sunday with Charles Davis and Ian Eagle on CBS. 4:05 kickoff, of course. Evan, hopefully I'll see you out there this Sunday, depending on where we're allowed to roam and where you're roaming. But hope to see you this Sunday. And thanks for your time here on the radio, my friend.
Yeah, you got it. Say hi to Charles for me.
That's Evan Washburn, everybody, with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we get back, we'll follow up on that conversation with Evan before we go around the NFL at 5:30. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And I feel like I should also mention, Anthony, I have launched a new Instagram page, Hoffman.sports. I don't really use, or I haven't to this point really used Instagram for content purposes. And I have been thinking about doing it for a long time. And so instead of just taking what my Instagram has been, which is my own personal page, and starting to spam all my friends with content, I was like, let's do this properly. So if you want to follow on Instagram, Hoffman.sports, very easy to find, Hoffman.sports. And there'll be all kinds of fun stuff. If you miss parts of the show, we'll put up funny clips. We'll put up analysis. We'll put up all the stuff at Hoffman.sports. So voila. We did it. We did it, everybody. Anthony, I actually want to pick your brain on where we just left that conversation with Evan. Good stuff from him on kind of the difference in the building. I loved the quote he had at the beginning there. Night and day is not being over dramatic in terms of what it's like in Ashburn these days, compared to what it has been in Ashburn in days past. But the idea of authenticity around coaches at this level. And the reason I'm curious in your opinion is you are actually around like youth athletes quite a bit. And whether it's the Capitol Hoops scene, whether it's, you know, you get to know kids in middle school because you work in a middle school as well. And then they get older and now are going off to college because we're old and that's how that works, is you do something long enough and then you're like, oh, I met this kid and now he's coming to try to take my job. Do you think that's a reflection of the athletes and them coming up and what they want in modern society? Is a reflection? I kind of think it's a little bit of everything. You know, some of it is like our age group, millennials, and, you know, whether it's older millennials, younger millennials are now getting into more positions of power, and the way we see the world is a specific way, and the authenticity and the realness is valued in a different way versus, I think, some other older generations. Like, just to be frank about it, like, there's a lot of papering over stuff. It's a lot of like, it'll be fine. And it's like, nah, that's not okay. Or like, nah, we should deal with this head on versus just saying it's okay and suppressing things and moving on. It's the way things were for a long time. It's not the way it is anymore. And so I think it's a little bit of both of like, there are people that are like our generation that are getting into these leadership positions, and guys like McVay and O'Connell and Mike McDaniel and a lot of these really successful coaches are that. You know, Joe Mazzulla and the Celtics, like, Mazzulla is a tough coach, but like, he's also really humane and real. And then it's also like, well, then athletes expect that, and the older coaches, some of whom have survived because they actually had those skills built in, and others because they've adapted to it over the years, like, those are the ones that are still doing really well and keeping jobs and succeeding into their 50s and 60s because they have those people skills, because ultimately that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it boils down to relationships and like building those. As you said, I work with kids. I also was a former athlete as well. So the way I grew up, you know, the way I was coached and things of that nature, I understand what was good for me, what was not good for me. And I'm able to, you know, translate that to how I see and how I used to coach kids. And I think generations older than us, they saw things more so like black and white, like do it this way or the highway kind of thing. And I think with my generation, and I'm not going to say it's only, I think with our generation, I think we just have a recollection of, you know, what worked for us in the past. We're going to take from, you know, what did work, even though it might not have been the best way. And then we also can adapt to like what we perceive as a more useful method of going about training athletes and building those relationships. So I think it all just goes back to like just relationships, to be honest, like how you talk to people, how you communicate and things of that nature. And then once you understand that, then you can, you know, understand how you should be working with different types of athletes, because everybody doesn't receive the same message the same way.
That's 100% true. Like, adaptability in coaching is so important. And I think the thing that gets misunderstood by sometimes both sides of the equation, and like, if you're good at coaching or you're good at looking at coaches and what makes them successful, like, you have this figured out, is, you know, the older generation will say like, oh, they lack discipline, they're soft, they're this. Mm-hmm. And then the younger generation will be like, well, they're hard asses and they don't compromise and they don't whatever, and they don't, you know, let people, you know, kind of feel what they need to feel and be in touch with their emotions, which unlocks their full potential. And I think both sides can actually be correct. Like, I think that there are younger folks, and some who are in coaching positions, who lose a team because there isn't a standard upheld. Like, that is possible. You can go too far in either direction. There is a sweet spot somewhere in the middle of, hey, like, the standard, and McVay has this saying that the standard is the standard. That, like, yeah, we might, like, we can talk about all kinds of things and we can have human conversations. We can have relationships. Like, we can have a back and forth. But at the end of the day, like, if I tell you that this needs to get done, we can talk about how the best way is to do it. But like, it's going to get done at this level, because otherwise, like, you're out of here. Like, we'll find, if it's the NFL, we'll find someone else. Because that's, you know, NFL, not for long. That's how it go. By the same token, I think that, there are obviously older coaches and people that are seen as more disciplinarians that do have that soft, what do you call it, softer, more emotionally in touch, emotionally intelligent is really, I think, the phrasing that I would say is most accurate, side, where they might have a moment where they're really, you know, hard ass and on it. And, you know, a guy that comes to mind is Bill Self at Kansas. When I worked in Lawrence, I don't know if most people know that, I worked in Lawrence for a very, very short period of time after college, before I went to Dallas. But in covering Self, you'd hear stories of guys who just absolutely would get hammered in practice. Like, he would rip them a new one. And is that how I would go about it? Or is that, like, you know, in 20 whatever years, if my kid's picking a college coach, do I want someone who's going to necessarily yell at my kid in a college basketball practice the way that Bill Self yelled at kids? No, but he did care about his guys, and he did show it. It's just like, rip you a new one, and then after practice in the locker room, be like, hey, by the way, how's your mom doing? Because something had been happening. And so, like, there were those moments, and it maybe it was a little more separate or whatever, but, like, I can guarantee you with the success that Bill Self's had, if something's going on with someone, you know, a player's mom or whatever, and he, you know, he's going to factor that into how he coaches that guy. And no one's being like, oh, Bill Self is soft, because he's asking about how, you know, human beings are doing. And I think there is a great phrase that Dan Quinn has, which is that you can only coach someone to the depth of your relationship with them. Because ultimately, the goal is to win. And so if you want to unlock someone's full potential, you have to know how to have the technical skills to do that from, like, a schematic, a technique, all that kind of stuff. And then you also need to unlock their psychology. Like, you need to put them in a space where they can perform at their best, because, you know, being under stress impacts your decision making. So how do you find ways to relieve stress and or train someone to perform under stress? And so there is a lot of stuff that goes into that. And there's a reason there's books and books and books and books on this stuff. But having the fundamental understanding that you have to understand who someone is and what makes them tick and how they learn to actually be the best version of yourself as a coach. And then knowing, oh, this person needs a harder, more disciplinarian type of approach, and this person needs maybe a little bit softer touch, but that's okay. Not judging them for that and saying either one is better or worse, but being able to accommodate both, like, that's what makes someone a great coach. And I think listening to Evan talk about that, and listening to a guy like Dan and Cliff, you know, Joe, I think they're all different personalities, but I think they all fundamentally understand that. And I think it's a huge reason why they've been able to get the most out of this roster that on paper should not be 4-2, but they are. And we'll see if they can get to 5-2 with a win against Carolina on Sunday. When we get back, all the other games, we pick each and every one of them. It is time to go around the NFL next on the Team 980. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and we are also streaming on YouTube at the Team 980. Right now at 5:30, it is time to go around the NFL. 6 o'clock, our pick six at 6. We'll get back to the Commanders and Panthers. Six players that we think will be key to Washington coming out victorious. And then 6:30 is our last segment today, so we'll pick the Commanders game. Then, of course, we always skip it when we go around the NFL. Save it for last. And then we got Wizards and Knicks preseason action tonight starting at 6:45. All right, Anthony, are you ready to go? As we both already have a win on the board in week 7.
I am indeed, Craig.
All right, we both last night picked the Denver Broncos, and they went out and absolutely smashoozled. Bamboozled, smashed, ran roughshod over, combine them all, pick them all, whatever you want to do to say. Man, they beat the crap out of the New Orleans Saints, who flat out stink. This is, I think, a huge problem for New Orleans, not just because they are talent deficient on offense, but, my friend, they all of a sudden look horrendous on defense as well. And Dennis Allen came into the year dead man walking in the eyes of most people. Then they went out and looked great for 2 weeks. And now it's like, is this dude going to last the weekend? Like, are we going to wake up Sunday morning to Jay Glazer and Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport being like, breaking news out of New Orleans, the Saints have fired Dennis Allen?
I hope that's not the case. You know, but that's how it is sometimes. I'm not going to lie, though. Them being, I guess, completely deficient of all their best players outside of Kamara.
Yeah.
Does hurt.
I did see something. I don't know whether this is true. Did he actually tell Sean Payton, come get me, as they hugged on the field after the game?
No way.
No way. I don't know whether that was someone saying, like, just saying, pretending, or whether someone, like, listened to the audio and...
Ain't no way he said that, Craig.
If I was Alvin Kamara, I'd want out. Yeah, bro, come get me. Last night, 7 carries, 10 yards.
And he had 6 catches for 14 yards.
Yeah, he went nowhere fast. Meanwhile, if I had told you last night, hey, they're going to have almost the same amount of carries, 7 versus 10. Who has more yardage on the ground, Bo Nix or Alvin Kamara? Who would you have said?
Definitely would have gone with Kamara, but...
Yeah, but he had 7 for 10. Bo Nix had 10 for 75.
Yeah. He was moving on a couple of them.
Javonte Williams, 14 for 88, 2 touchdowns. Nix, not, like, super great as a passer.
No.
16 of 26 for 164, but, like, they didn't have to be. Also, old friend Cody Barton with the touchdown on the fumble recovery. So, there you go.
He had a
Denver,
big game.
Yeah, 4-3, Saints 2-5 after a 2-0 start. Yikesy daisies. Speaking of yikesy daisies, I would like to personally apologize to the entire, really, anyone in Britain. Great Britain, just England, Scotland, anyone on the, I mean, look, the Irish and the British, long history, they are not the same country, but they're close enough to catch some shrapnel here. I'm sorry to the Irish, too. I mean, shoot, across the channel, north of France, watch out. I am so sorry to all of that entire... I'm sorry to all of Europe that we sent Patriots Jaguars to you.
Yeah, that's brutal. That is absolutely brutal. Maybe the NFL schedule makers thought Drake May was going to be having a fantastic rookie season. The Jags wouldn't be as bad as they are. They have Trevor Lawrence.
Well, that part I understand.
Boy. Boy.
Although I will say, a team named the Patriots that's from Boston, which is named the Patriots because they'd separated from Great Britain, whole founding of America thing.
Yeah.
I feel like the Patriots shouldn't be allowed to play in England.
Yeah.
The more I think about it. Hmm.
I would agree.
Hmm. Never. Jags, England's team, by the way, never will have had a bigger home crowd advantage than going against a team named the Patriots from Boston in America. The Jags are terrible, Anthony. They're 6-point favorites. Who you got?
This one's tough, man. I guess I have to go with the Jag.
You don't have to do anything. I mean, outside of pick a team.
All right, let's just go 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3, Jags. You say Pags?
Yes.
I said you had to pick one team.
I'm torn. All right, I'm going to go with the Jags. I'm going to go with the home team.
Look.
Oh, my God.
Drake May definitely had a little pop last week.
Yeah.
But, and the Jags were so disappointing. I was like, oh, did they turn the corner? No. But, man, the Patriots are a really bad football team. And the Jags have been over there for a week. I'm going Jags. We spent way too much time on that game. Seahawks and Falcons. This is a game worth spending time on. Seahawks are 3-3 coming into Falcons, to the Falcons, who are 4-2 on the year. Atlanta's 3-point favorites at home. Seattle has the rest advantage here, as they were on Thursday night against the 49ers last time we saw them. That was a bizarre game, where they gave up a ton and then made a comeback and then gave up more chunk plays to ruin it. Geno is even touchdowns to picks on the year. Bijan has started to get going. This Falcons run game is starting to get going. Expected to be a high scoring game. 51.5 is the total here. You want me to go first, or you want to make a pick here?
You can go first.
I'm going to take Atlanta. I just don't trust Seattle, period. I don't really trust Atlanta either, but I think I trust them a little bit more. I think the fact that they've got this run game going, like, they have a defensive head coach in Raheem. Like, he should lean on their OC to be like, hey, let's keep running the ball with Robinson, with Algier. And then Kirk is one of the best play-action passers in the sport. That is how Kirk Cousins has made his money, is that outside zone, back to the defense from under center, play action, and the healthier he gets and the more confident he gets in that Achilles and that calf and everything down there at the ankle, like the more he can really do that and drive throws. And, you know, Kyle Pitts even made an appearance last time out after he's had a pretty miserable year. So I think that Atlanta offense, I know they put up a bunch of points on Carolina, and they also had some, you know, defense special teams boosts, but I think Atlanta's starting to figure some things out. Famous last words, but I'll take the Falcons.
I think I'm gonna go with the Falcons as well. Seattle's in the bottom seven of run defense, and we know what the Falcons want to do. They want to play smash mouth football. Tyler Allgeier, I think he found himself in the end zone last week. Bijan, of course, had a couple of touchdowns. The Falcons have found something, and I think it's only going to get better. Like, they start out the season a little slow. The defense was ahead of them. But now it seems that the offense is catching up. I'm going to go with the Falcons here. I'm not a believer in what Seattle's doing over there. I think Mike McDonald is having a little tough time adjusting.
I mean, they've been beaten up by some injuries. I mean, the Rick Woolen injury is big for them. Yep. That's definitely hurt. But I agree. They're finding their footing. All right, 2-1-2-3 games, because I'm not wasting time talking about them. There's at least one team, if not two teams in each, that don't deserve our attention. Titans, Bills, 1-2-3.
Bills.
Buffalo. Bengals and Browns, 1-2-3.
Bengals.
Cincinnati. All right. Excellent. Glad we took care of that like the professionals that we are and didn't do what we did with the stupid London game. Texans and Packers. Green Bay favored by 2.5 at home. Ooh. Over Houston, Anthony. I am on Houston for competition Wednesday to cover here, but who are we going with straight up? Stroud obviously playing tremendous ball. He's thrown for 1,500 yards already, 10 touchdowns to 4 picks. Meanwhile, Jordan Love has thrown quite a number of picks as he's gotten back healthy, starting to find himself a little bit, starting to figure out some of the receivers. Romeo Dobbs starting to come on, but they have so many guys, and every week you don't know who it's going to be. Green Bay favored at home. Who you got?
I'm going with the go. Pack, go. I don't know. I really like the Packers. Also, I think the Texans got to show me a little bit more, man. I think a lot of the games they've been winning, they've edged teams out. They haven't necessarily gone out and, I guess, just asserted themselves. They have so much talent. And I just feel like also the loss of Nico Collins hurts a lot. Jair is going to be matched up with Diggs, so I think that's going to be a good matchup. But outside of that, I mean, they did get Mixon back, so he's probably going to have a big game. I just think it's going to be too much pack.
Yeah.
Too much.
What you said at the end there is where I'm going, Houston, here. I agree that earlier this season, I was the one who kept saying it. Like, Houston's, like, they're winning games, similar to the Chiefs. Hey, you're winning, but, like, all these performances are that impressive.
Yeah.
And then they go out and they put up 41 on the Patriots. And, again, the Patriots are not very good, and they were able to turn Drake May over and all that kind of stuff. But they went out and handled their business. And I think they have started to catch a stride a little bit. Stroud has just continued to ramp up his game. And I don't really trust this Packers defense as much as I trust, CJ and what they do offensively. So I'm going to take Houston on the road here. I will not be surprised at all if Green Bay wins this. I could see any number of ways this game goes. But I'm gonna throw a wild one out there. I'm going to take Houston on the road. I've got them to cover on Competition Wednesday. So as long as if they lose by one or two, I'm in good shape But I'm going to take them straight up as well in our picks here. So there's that. Dolphins, Colts. Last one we'll pick now before we take a break, come back, and then we have a banger back half of picks and analysis for you. Some great games. Not a ton. The 4 o'clock window's got one. It's got some good primetime games. And one more good game in the 1 o'clock window to talk about. But Dolphins and Colts, Anthony, your boys in blue at home, favored by 3. Tyler Huntley's now had a little bit more time to work with Mike McDaniel. Does that scare you at all that these Dolphins can get back on track?
Yeah, it does. There were a couple of throws and a couple of games that Tyler Huntley had to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle where he was overthrowing them. But it was also probably the first time he's ever just stepped back and launched one. So I think they've definitely probably built up some chemistry. So that scares me a little bit. The time off also scares me.
And then Jonathan Taylor not playing this week definitely scares me. I'm a little torn. I think I'm gonna just go with my guys in blue. I'm gonna go with them. I'm hoping that they pull it out. But Anthony Richardson's got to show me something. He's got to. He's been too inconsistent. And if he's inconsistent at the quarterback position, it makes
hard
everything
to win.
Yeah.
Hard to win, yeah. And you'd have to wonder if you're Steichen and this game's close late and Richardson's killing you, like, would you just pull him and go to Flacco? Like, that's a big boy coaching decision that you got to make. But I'm going to go with the Colts as well. I think they have enough. I just don't trust. Like, this Dolphins offense is going to be better than it was with Skylar Thompson, with Tyler Huntley, and a couple weeks for McDaniel to be like, hey, Tyler, what do you like? Can we build something? Because this offense was so Tua-specific, and it's hard to rebuild on the fly. But you get a bye week in there where McDaniel's got nothing but time to figure it out, get the players back in there, figure it out, and go. But I still think the Colts defensively have just enough, even though it's been up and down. And I don't love the Dolphins and where they're at defensively. So I'm going to go with Indy as well. All right, Lions-Vikings is next to wrap up the 1 o'clock window, along with Eagles-Giants, some injury news there, and then the Super Bowl rematch. And a really, really, really good Monday night slate as well to come next on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live as well on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show, Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Going around the NFL as we do in the back half of the 5 o'clock hour each and every Friday, picking each and every game. And by the way, last week, we both went 13-1. Forgot to mention that earlier, Anthony. 13-1.
Very impressive. Very impressive.
What game? Like, we each missed a different game, though, right?
Yeah, so you missed the Jags-Bears game. And I missed the Bills Jets game.
I didn't miss a single game played in America. How about that? How you like them apples? All right, Lions and Vikings. Minnesota favored by 1.5. This game is very, very interesting to me because I think the Lions are just straight up a better team, even though I do really like Minnesota. But I also like Minnesota's so boom or bust with how aggressive they are defensively. I think the Lions could blow them out. I also think it could blow up in the Lions' face and the Vikings could win in a blowout with how aggressive they are, like aggressive they are defensively. Get Justin Jefferson to a bunch of man-to-man situations. Like, how's that going to go? So Minnesota's favored by 1.5 at home. I believe I took Detroit in this competition Wednesday.
Yep.
And I'm taking them straight up as well.
Okay. You're taking the Lions. I'm going to take the Vikings here. And it's primarily because of what Brian Flores does on the defensive side of the ball in terms of just blitzing and disguising coverages. And I think when you're able to knock Jared Goff off his pivot and, you know, make him a little bit uncomfortable in the pocket, that's where he struggles. So I'm expecting some heavy blitzes and things of that nature to get him off.
All right, so you've got Minnesota there.
Yes, sir.
Could be 6-0 if they can get that done coming off the bye. Eagles and Giants, bad news out of Philadelphia. Big-time injuries. Dallas Goedert has been ruled out for this game with a hamstring. Jordan Mailata has gone on IR, so the Eagles' big strength of their offensive line takes a pretty enormous hit. I'm still taking Philly here because I just kind of refuse to pick the Giants unless they're facing, like, I don't know, the Raiders. But I do think this is going to be a good game, and I do think this one's going to be a bit of a slog.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a defensive battle. I'm going to take the Eagles as well.
The thing that pushes it to Philly for me is, one, I think Saquon will do something crazy because it's a revenge game. Two, I don't trust the Giants secondary, and they, you know, the Eagles just need to generate a few one-on-one shots with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, and, like, that could be the difference in the game.
Yep.
You hit two big completions and get one big Saquon play. You score 21 points, you're probably beating the Giants.
Yeah.
So there's that. That concludes the 1 o'clock window. There's only three games in the 4 o'clock window. Of course, Panthers, Commanders. The other 4:05 game is Raiders and Rams. This game probably deserves a little bit more discussion, but we're short on time, and both teams aren't very good, so we're just going to pick it. 1, 2, 3,
Rams.
They're favored by 7, by the way. Do you realize how bad you have to be for the 1-4 Rams to be 7-point favorites over you?
Well, Cooper Kupp's coming back.
Well, what? Oh, Cooper Kupp is coming back?
Yep.
Nice. That's fantastic. I need Puka to come back, but that's fantasy reasons for me. Chiefs and 49ers, Super Bowl rematch in San Francisco. Niners favored by 2. Anthony, the two quarterbacks in this game currently feature the best average depth of target in recent memory for one team, and the what would be the lowest average depth of target, a.k.a. how far does the ball travel in the air down the field, in the history of the next-gen stats era. Which one is which? Who's throwing the ball closest to the line of scrimmage, and who is driving the ball down the field most between Brock Purdy and Patrick Mahomes?
Purdy's launching that football, and Mahomes is dinking and dumping.
That is 100% correct. In the history of the next-gen stats era, there has never been a quarterback season that is more dinky and dunky than what Patrick Mahomes is currently doing right now. Thanks to the multitude of injuries at the receiver position, whether it's Rashee Rice, whether it's Hollywood Brown before the season even got started. So between the backs and, you know, little pop passes to Xavier Worthy to try to get him the ball in space, and obviously trying to rediscover Travis Kelce's role in this offense, they are dinking and dunking their way down the field, but it's working. They're getting first downs, and ultimately that allows their defense to stay fresh and be great. That's what concerns me, is the Chiefs' defense. I just think that's the best, like, of the 49ers' offense, 49ers' defense, Chiefs' offense, Chiefs' defense. The best unit on the field Sunday is the Chiefs' defense. And I don't know what to do with that information.
I'm going to go with the Chiefs here. I don't think the 49ers' defense is as daunting as it's been in years past. And I think Mahomes is going to be able to dink and dump the entire game. A lot of teams are playing them two safety high, so they don't have a lot of explosive plays. So if you're sustaining drives that way, I trust Mahomes because he knows he can beat you that way.
Yeah, I do too. Ultimately, that's, I think, where I lean. Also, I believe Andy Reid is like a stupid career record coming off byes. Like, I think it is his entire time in Philadelphia in the first, like, whatever years in Kansas City, he's never lost. I think that finally got broken a couple years ago. But he's, you know, let's say he's like 18-1 or something like that off the bye. So I'm going to say that give him the bye week to figure out this new offense, and they'll figure it out. I'll take the Chiefs as well. Jets and Steelers. Russell Wilson going to be QB1 for Pittsburgh. We know that because a couple of players spilled the beans. Mike Tomlin wanted to keep that in-house. Whoopsie daisies. Don't go to this one for points, boys and girls. Total here, 38.5, Anthony.
Oh my gosh.
38.5. Jets are favored by 2 on the road. I don't get that. I don't understand it at all. I'm taking Pittsburgh at home. Call me a sucker, but I'm doing it.
You're taking
the Steelers. Yeah. I should just hold my nose. This line stinks. Take the Jets, but I hate the Jets, so I'm irrationally picking emotionally here.
Well, I'm going with the Jets. I don't think I've bet against Aaron Rodgers all season long.
How's that going for you?
It's not going good. But Devontae Adams is out there, baby. Let's go.
That is a good point.
Let's go, baby.
I still don't trust their play callers to like figure it out. Although Aaron Rodgers just does whatever he wants the line of scrimmage anyway. The Jets are probably winning that game, but I just...
Principle. I get it.
Do I want to be principled or do I want to be right? You know what? If I switch now and the Jets lose, I'm going to be so mad at myself that I'm not switching.
Yeah.
Ravens
smart.
And Bucks. This is a fantastic football game, depending on which Buccaneers team shows up. If Good Baker shows up, which they're at home and he's definitely played really well at home, and he's throwing the ball all over the lot. Like, yeah, he might throw Kyle Hamilton 1, but that's okay. He'll throw Mark Andrews 2, and they'll be in the end zone. And Zay Flowers, and, you know, we know all the weapons. Or, sorry, I just named Ravens. That'd be cool if Baker were throwing to Ravens receivers. That's not how that works. But, you know, he's going to find Cade Otton and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Like, he'll find them everywhere. They'll sling it. They're not afraid to pass the ball 50 times a game if they have to. Baker's like, yeah, sign me up. I woke up feeling dangerous. Meanwhile, can Baltimore run against Vita Vea? Like, that is the question defensively. Bowles will have a good plan for them in terms of run blitzing and things like that. So I am fascinated. Only two teams to beat Washington this year, head-to-head on Monday night. I'm going to pick Baltimore because I think they're the best team in the NFL right now. But I do think this will be a really good heavyweight fight.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the back and forth. I do think Baker's probably going to give the Ravens one or two turnovers. So I think that's going to be the difference in the game. I got the Ravens. Yeah.
And last but not least, Chargers, two-point favorites at Arizona. First ever exclusive ESPN Plus game. 1, 2, 3, Chargers. We just don't have time to talk about it more, so we're both on the Chargers. Sorry, Arizona. You probably deserve slightly more respect, but not that much. All right, those are our picks. Read them and weep. When we get back, we pick six players, not games, players who we think will have the biggest impact for the Commanders and Panthers on Sunday. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, and always live on the free Odyssey app.